We also vet out these partners before we even have these introductory calls, see what their values are like, see who they're serving, and what initiatives they may have. So I think we've been very clear. We also strategize on who we want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I think as an entrepreneur, there's always so many opportunities that are thrown your way, which are great, but not all money and not all support is good. You need to really vet out who you want to work with, especially if you have a very clear mission in place. I'm also very vocal about my value system. Probably may have gotten me in trouble sometimes.
Good trouble.
But I'm also not afraid to stand up for what I feel is right.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development. In our first season, we viewed the constellation of stories generated by Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program alumni creating positive impact in communities in New York. We explore how community-driven founders navigate the challenges of accessing the right resources at the right time, how they stay true to their respective missions, and how they best manage their potential. We welcome you as we hear tales of trials and successes, as well as valuable advice from our interviewee entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode 7 with Jessica Valencia of Unlock NYC.
Jessica, welcome to Communitas of New York. I am thrilled to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Monique. I'm really excited to be chatting with you today.
Yes, we are going to go ahead and dive into all the amazing things that you are doing over at Unlock NYC. And I would love it if we could start with you telling us a little bit about Unlock NYC and really what inspired you to start this company.
Of course. So Unlock NYC is a tech nonprofit majority led by women who have experienced housing discrimination, also known as source of income discrimination in New York City, which is when a landlord or a broker denies a tenant with a voucher the opportunity to view or rent an apartment because of their source of income. And we started in Brooklyn. We started out of Blue Ridge Labs, which is a social incubator that is hosted by the Robin Hood Foundation. And my colleagues started out in the summer of 2019, where they started interviewing a lot of folks from the community. And something that was rampantly coming up was voucher discrimination. A lot of folks were either facing evictions or were homeless, residing at a shelter, but were facing a lot of blatant denials from brokers and landlords and cannot secure housing. And how I got involved, it becomes a bit more personal. I, at that moment, was facing an eviction. I had a newborn son, and I was not working. I was on maternity leave, and I was issued a voucher, a FEPS voucher. And I had a really bad experience in my housing search. I had no idea that I even had rights at that moment.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about over 5 years ago. And I did a Google search and I reached out to 311. I got no response. And I came across Unlock in a Facebook group. They were hosting these sort of like surveys for voucher holders who were interested in being part of their building their prototype.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Blue Ridge Labs and the rest is history. I never left.
And I love the fact that, you know, you saw something and fortunately you experienced this, but you also did something about it. And for you, how have you been able to like balance the, okay, this is what we're here to do. And this is also how we're informing other people about this issue in order to enlighten them about, you know, you mentioned the fact that you didn't even know you had rights. So enlighten them about what's going on.
For me, it I've always been a person who likes to advocate for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I was looking to 311 for a solution so I can advocate for myself. So for me, this felt very natural to be involved with this group of women, because we're all like women led at Unlock. And wanting to learn more, I also wanted to teach other voucher holders how to advocate for themselves, learn about their rights, but also know that there's support for them within this movement, just because often people that are facing evictions or homelessness do not have a safety net and do not have a support system. So for me, it became crucial to be part of this. I felt very much at home, and I knew that I wanted to pay it forward for other tenants who were possibly facing and are still facing the same challenges that I once did.
Yeah, it's such a moving story, and been able to receive a lot of press coverage and are at this moment of expansion. So what has been the biggest milestone or success moment for Unlock NYC so far, and how has this shaped the trajectory of the company?
I think we have a couple of milestones that I feel that are very important. Of course, one of our biggest successes have been launching our individual justice program. It launched in 2021, which is our Rights Recorder app. And with the Rights Recorder app, tenants can document and record any discrimination that they might face throughout their housing search. Up to date, we have helped house nearly over 200 families.
Wow.
And they've been able to secure housing by using the chat box, reporting discrimination, and then we connect the tenants to legal service providers so that they can weigh out their options and see what fits best for them. Because ultimately, the tenant decides their outcome, like what they want to do in regards to next steps. I feel like this was like our focal milestone. And our chatbot is actually turning 5 years in January.
Congrats. Yeah. That's big.
And because of this individual justice program, we have been able to also create our systems change program, building on the data that we collected from these reports. And this data has been able to influence policy. So we work with other grassroots organizations, policymakers, researchers to fuel more policy change and help open the door for more New Yorkers that are facing these challenges. And then we also launch our leadership development program, which empowers voucher holders to advocate for change. And within our leadership program, we offer the Leadership Collective, which is a 6-month cohort. And the Leadership Collective serves as our advisory board at Unlock. And it's made up of impacted individuals who have faced homelessness, evictions, source of income discrimination, and they join this cohort. They get nominated. They join the cohort for 6 months. They get training, internships, so that they can become fair housing leaders within their communities. Right now, we are currently at cohort 6. We just launched. So we're also really excited that, you know, we've had these three great programs that are combating discrimination, but in different ways.
And I love how involved everything is and how you all are getting the community involved. That is just so beautiful. You mentioned these milestones. And of course, I know having milestones, there comes a time where there are shifts and big decisions that have to be made within business. And so for you, have you ever had to pivot or make a significant change? And if so, can you share what drove that decision?
Of course. We are a small team at Unlock. We have four full-time staff members. We have two contractors and interns as well. So we're very lucky. But when we started talking about expansion plans, which I can talk a little bit about after this, we realized that we require certain resources, financial as well. And we wanted to have a clear, sustainable plan in place, which meant diversifying our funding sources. So when we first launched Unlock, majority of our funding was institutional based. We did some crowdfunding during the pandemic, which helped tremendously. but it was majorly institutional based from, you know, funders, both private and institutional. And we realized that we wanted to look for different streams of revenue. And that's mm-hmm. where our pilot idea came about, and partnering with other agencies now on a state level. So that way we can get contracts and have other means of revenue as well. So it really got down to the nitty gritty where we mm-hmm. strategize for maybe like we hire actually a strategy planner, and we strategize for maybe over 6 months so that we can have a clear vision for the next 2 to 5 years of what Unlock would look like. How would we diversify these streams, and you know, what are our scaling plans as well?
And Jessica, I love the fact that you shared like the time it took to focus on this strategy before you actually did something. And for a lot of entrepreneurs, thinking about the shifts that need to happen within the company in order for it to grow, they also think about the overall mission. So for you all, how did this shift impact your overall mission or the direction of Unlock NYC?
I don't feel that it's impacted our mission, because I think one of the things that I would probably recommend, and it's also very true to us, is that, mm-hmm. you know, we have made sure that our expansion aligns with our mission and our values. And I feel like entrepreneurs need to be very clear about their goals and their values alignment. So we have values in place, and we know that if, let's say, an expansion or working with a funder does mm-hmm. not have the same value system, then we may not take that route. Because mm-hmm. this is very important for us. I think navigating that obviously is not easy as a team, but mm-hmm. we have a non-hierarchy sense of like power at Unlock, where all of our teammates have power and they're all leaders, and we're mm-hmm. able to talk and strategize together without having one person in charge that makes these decisions. So I think collaborating with your team is also very important as well. And I think also for us as well, was before we even decided to scale fully, because this is mm-hmm. still works, we are testing and piloting first. So our first pilot city outside of New York City is in Buffalo, New York. We mm-hmm. launched this summer in June, actually.
Congrats.
Thank you. We're really excited. Mm-hmm. And we teamed up with Pratt and Enterprise Community Partners and HOME, which is a nonprofit fair mm-hmm. housing organization in upstate New York that helps tenants. And we wanted to make sure that local stakeholders obviously were involved in this process. So we are test piloting with 50 voucher holders in Buffalo to see how it works out for them, how they use mm-hmm. the tool, how it helps them in their process, in their housing search process. So we're hoping, and well, I know it's going to go great, but I know yes. that it's going to go great. But I'm hoping that, you know, by the end of 2026, we are completely rolled out throughout the state of New York.
Yeah, that's a big deal. So that's a major, and I know it's going to go well too.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Jessica, being that you're in this industry where there might be laws that might be changing, or things, certain requirements, or even changes in the community, how do you balance and stay true to your mission while adapting to these changes?
From the beginning, we were very much set on holding discriminators accountable. So that mm-hmm. has not changed within our mission. We are very proud of being a pro-tenant organization. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do work with government agencies, but we're also not afraid of voicing that we're here to support tenants, mm-hmm. and empower them and provide them with the resources and the tools that they may need. For example, in New York City, we have partnered with the Commission of Human Rights, and they are responsible for safeguarding the rights of New Yorkers, not just for like housing laws, but also for employment, disability, gender, religion, et cetera, all of these titles. So for us, it was really important to align with a government agency that safeguards the protections of New Yorkers. But we're also not afraid of holding people accountable, because for us, our most important community, yes, we work with different stakeholders, right? We work with government agencies, we work with legal service providers, but our primary audience is, you know, is voucher holders. They are the ones that are our main group, our community, and we rely on them. You know, without them, we wouldn't have this tool. We wouldn't have Unlock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things I think is so important to what you were saying is the fact that you all are very clear on your mission and your values, and you stand for that. And especially for a lot of people that might be listening, or entrepreneurs in general, they may feel that they have to hide some of those parts or conform, especially when they're partnering with certain organizations. So for you all, how do you make sure that you're able to speak up and then stand firm in your values? But then also, how are you strategizing on who to partner with that's in alignment with these things?
Of course. I think something that we are also very transparent about is that we bring up these values immediately upon introductory calls, right? We also vet out these partners before we even have these introductory calls, see what their values are like, see who they're serving, and what initiatives they may have. So I think we've been very clear. We also strategize on who we want to work with. I think as an entrepreneur, there's always so many opportunities that are thrown your way, which are great, but not all money and not all support is good, right? You need to really vet out who you want to work with, especially if you have a very clear mission in place. I'm also very vocal about my value system. Probably may have gotten me in trouble sometimes.
Good trouble.
But I'm also not afraid to stand up for what I feel is right. And that is the rights of my community and the rights of all New Yorkers and Americans as we start to expand. We've had other cities shown interest in our tech and wanting to bring out our tech into their infrastructure. So that's something that we are currently exploring. I know there's a need for it, not just in New York City. Obviously, New York City, the housing crisis has been overwhelming, ridiculous at this point, and there's a need for it. But across the nation, we have over 5 million households that rely on rental subsidies to help pay their rent. And with our economic climate and inflation, job loss, medical emergencies, and so many other things that can propel homelessness, we know that our tech is much needed for tenants to have access straight from their phone. You know, people can report straight from their phone or their tablet or their computer and use our app to document and report and get access to their rights, something that is not so accessible, right? Because often, for example, in New York City, 301, you know, they're extremely overwhelmed. They may not respond to your report right away. And sometimes a report may just sit around. So for us, it's just really important to continue in this mission. We do believe that all humans have the right to housing, regardless of their source of income.
Certainly. And speaking of tech and your app, and also of strategy, the We Unlock NYC website is such an important part of your strategy. So how has the website changed and developed over time? And if you could share what details and decisions went into those changes.
Of course. So when we first built the website and the prototype for our model, we really wanted it to be community-centered. So we started to participate at local workshops with tenants. One of the local workshops that we work with were Neighbors Together, which is a nonprofit out in Brooklyn. And they have a soup kitchen, but they also have these workshops for tenants. And we would observe that a lot of them were already like documenting and keeping receipts. So we obviously, our inspiration came from working with the community. And when we first launched our website, I felt like it was a good website, but I felt like it needed more of a human touch. So it definitely has changed. I can definitely say now that we have more human-centered stories around successes, sharing stories from our community, sharing stories from our leadership collective, talking more about our impact and our programs. So we definitely have taken more of a humanized touch to our website. Of course, still keeping tech core, which is, you know, what we are at the core, we're tech, right? But we wanted to make it more accessible for people. And I think often sometimes when I see with tech-driven solutions is like they have really great ideas, but like that humanizing aspect tends to be missing. And we didn't want to just look like robots, right? we wanted our community to be very involved in this process, and they still very much are. Like, for example, a lot of the campaigns and the graphics that you'll see featured on our website and on social media are suggestions and inspiration from our community, specifically our leadership collective, who we shared our ideas with. And they're like, hey, no, you should add this, you should add that. That may be more relatable to a voucher holder. So I think always taking their suggestions into consideration has been really important for us as we develop our website and a prototype.
Yeah. You know, as you're speaking, I'm like, all the things I'm learning, and it's really speaking to the involvement of the community, and they feel like I'm a part of this decision. So I love that.
They definitely are. I mean, often, I think one of our main ideas was wanting to incorporate the voice of this community, which is often marginalized, is often forgotten. And often when we first come in contact with them, right, because we have an outreach team. That once our app has received the report, they follow up one-on-one. They get a phone call, usually it lasts 60 minutes, and they talk about the report, their experiences, and options on how to proceed for next steps. And often the first thing they would hear is like, wow, like I've never been heard by anyone before. Like no one ever wants to talk to me. I feel like I have no voice. So after using our tools and engaging with our Unlock team, people feel empowered. People feel like they have a voice. People feel like they have a support system, which often they don't get from the agencies that are already in place to serve these communities. So that was also very important for me as well, because I often felt like I had no voice during my housing search, right?
Yeah, certainly. And now I want to shift to talk about, because we're building such a phenomenal business, I'm sure it has not always been roses and peaches, and some of the challenges that you faced, and also just how you've continued to persevere. So what were some of the challenges that you have experienced in terms of expansion? So we talked about a lot of the milestones for Unlock NYC while keeping these end users and beneficiaries in the center of your vision.
Definitely. I think first and foremost, we knew that we wanted to leverage our tech to empower our community. And it's often low-income tenants using housing vouchers, often face challenges that are limited to access to tech, right? There's not a lot of tech built for them. And number two, there's often a lack of trust in the system. The system as in like the government agencies that are in place. So obviously to overcome that, we decided to work with the community. As I mentioned, you know, we've also partnered with over 50 community-based organizations and legal service providers. So that way we can connect tenants with the resources they need, but they also feel like they can trust us because we're not exactly a government agency, right? We're still a nonprofit. We care about community. So that has helped us a lot as well. And I think also one of the challenges that we faced starting off, right, during our like our seeding stage was communicating like source of income discrimination or housing discrimination to funders. When we first started this wasn't a conversation, or a lot of people really didn't understand, because it's a very complex issue to just simplify to funders. So we definitely have tested different ways of like how to pitch this to funders, tailor it specifically to them, but also humanize the data, humanize the issue, where we're like, we're bringing in real life stories. For me, I felt like that's really important. Also, building relationships for us was key. Starting off, like, engaging with funders and partners just beyond the application phase, right? Like, just beyond the grant writing, but attending events. You know, we attend a lot of, like, panel and speaking events. We have also been invited to speak at various events. Networking and being open to collaboration, I think that's also very important. I do feel that fundraising is not just about asking for money. It's also about building trust and showing long-term commitment to your cause or your mission. And I think the final piece would be like, just be prepared for rejections. We've had a lot of rejections. You still get rejections. It happens. It's normal. It's part of the process. But use this feedback to improve like your writing, your proposals, and just stay focused on finding the right funders that align with your mission and your values.
Certainly. And while you were like navigating these challenges, like what resources were the most valuable to you throughout this process?
When we first started Blue Ridge Labs, you know, under the Robin Hood Foundation, we were provided with a lot of resources and mentorship to help us like develop the concept and build a prototype. But we definitely had a lot of mentoring along the way that we were able to talk to people and help us connect to other resources. And I think that's also very important. Like, you know, if you have like a funder that you have a close relationship with, they can also say, they can also serve as a doorway to connect you possibly to other funders or other fundraising initiatives. So that was very key for us too as well, because one of the things that I've noticed specifically, for example, this year, I've been working more on like corporate foundations. And I've realized like, unless you have a connection in that specific world, it's really hard to get your foot into that door. So that has been one of my challenges, but I've been working on it. And we've been able to connect with other corporate funders, but that's thanks to the relationship that we already have with some of our funders. It would have not been able to happen without them. For example, earlier this year, my main focus, so at Unlock, we don't necessarily have like a fundraising lead. All of us take stabs at different funders and seeking partnerships. So my focus was really on building this corporate funder at Unlock. And I applied to so many places. Believe it or not, our first six-figure grant came from a corporate funder, which was Wells Fargo. Prior to that, it was really hard for us to get like a six-figure grant. But once you do have a six-figure grant, we noticed that more funders believed in us. There was just more credibility to us, which is very interesting. I found from my observation, because obviously when a lot of nonprofits or for-profit ventures start, you need funding, but I noticed that like funders want to invest in ideas or initiatives that have already been funded by other institutions and have a very set, clear mission and goals, right? So once we secure funding with Wells Fargo, we notice more opportunities, more doors opening for us as well. And this past year, I've been really focused on corporate funding. I definitely got a lot of denials. No, thank you. We actually connected. We were connected to M&T Bank this summer, which has been on our radar through one of our funder relationships. And we were actually granted a $20,000 grant this summer from M&T. But that was really exciting. It definitely took a lot of work. But once again, I think it goes back to like fundraising is not just about asking for money. It does take months. So building, let's say if you're building a relationship with a corporate funder, that could be 6 months, right? From like introductory calls, meetings, creating a proposal, then the logistics around the money when it's going to be issued. And then if it's an institutional funder, that can take up to a year to build that relationship. So I think that's why it's so important to plan ahead when seeking funding from these vendors.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of funding, Jessica, you noted was before you received the funding from Wells Fargo, before that you were facing a lot of challenges in terms of like, no. Can you talk a little bit more about why you felt that was happening and how did you kind of deal with that in that moment?
Yeah, definitely. I think from my observation, I noticed that it was happening because we weren't funded by any major, let's say, institution, right? Aside from the Robin Hood Foundation, we had at Blue Ridge Labs, but we were getting a lot of denials. We were getting a lot of no's. And I think funders really want to invest in something that has already been invested in, where they see revenue and money coming in, which is understandable, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting because the Wells Fargo grant wasn't something that we looked for. Mm-hmm. We were very lucky. At that moment, I was hosting monthly We Unlock NYC workshops. Mm-hmm. And the grant officer who was in leading this grant at Wells Fargo, he was specifically focused on housing issues in New York City. And he found out about our workshop on our social media and signed up.
Wow.
And he wasn't able to attend that day, but then we follow up with him via email. And we're like, hey, you know, we saw that you signed up. You know, we would love to chat more. And that's where the relationship started, from like a workshop that they saw on social media. Yeah. So we also like, social media plays a big part of it as well, creating visibility for your brand, for your organization. But we've had a supporter from him from day one, and he's still part of our advisory, I call our mentor advisory board at Unlock, and we still go to him for advice or suggestions as we continue to scale.
Yeah, that's so good. And, you know, just like even the fact that he wasn't able to attend, but he still saw. And then also for people who are listening, I asked that question also because of how would you encourage or advise someone else to approach this process of obtaining grants and funding? What advice could you give to someone around that?
I think one of the tools that has been really, really key for me, I use this platform. We use this platform called Instrumental. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, if you heard about it, but it's a platform where you can search for different types of funders, grants available for nonprofits. But there's like very specific searches because often a lot of funders have specific requirements of what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So being able to vet out the funders, tailor specifically to what they're seeking, because obviously we fall under more of like housing justice, poverty related issues, marginalized communities, social justice issues. Mm-hmm. So being very strategic about that approach, often I know that like funding, if you see grants from funders and it looks like a lot of money, that's great. But if you're going to spend a lot of time grant writing, you want to make sure that it's focused and it aligns with, you know, with your mission. So we've been able to organize and strategize by using Instrumental, and it has made our lives much easier when it comes to the whole researching for prospects.
Yeah. And with this, like Jessica, how do you balance this demand of outreach at Unlock NYC with this time that is required for fundraising and securing grants?
I'm very lucky that we have a very hardworking team.
Yes.
That we all put in the work equally. Everyone is extremely dedicated. We do have a great outreach team that focuses on outreach specifically from our users. We also have internally an operations assistant that focuses on handling any outreach communications, whether it's media or like, for example, funders or other partners that are interested in collaborating with Unlock. So she's able to help us organize that and structure that. And obviously we all take on different roles, right? Like I specifically focus on communications, but I also focus on like partner building and fundraising and outreach as well when it comes to establishing relationships with partners, which has been really important for us. So I think sometimes wearing many hats in the beginning is going to happen. You're going to have to do things that are outside your work, right? Your focus, but that's fine. I mean, that's, you know, we're able to do it all.
Yeah.
And we have a really great work-life balance. I will say that. We do. We have established a 4-day work week.
Oh, wow. Inspiring. I'm inspired.
We do believe that humans should have time to rest and focus on other things outside of work and hobbies and take care of their families. But when we are working Monday through Thursday, we are definitely very focused on a lot. But I'm very lucky to be in an organization that really values its team, really values our role as women. Whether you want to be a mother or not be a mother, we are supportive of everyone, which we also provide very flexible schedules. And all we are also remote first. So we do have a Brooklyn office, but most of our teammates work remotely, which is great because you're able to be flexible on your day-to-day schedule as well.
That is wonderful and inspiring for sure. I want to talk a little bit more about the details around grant utilization. So if you could share a little bit more about the expectations of grant providers and the availability of grants.
So expectations may differ from grant funder to another. For example, and when applying for, let's say, corporate funding, I've noticed applications are far more extensive and there are more metrics that they are interested in measuring. It definitely has more of a formal feel to it. So the language may have to be more tailored to that specific audience. What I've noticed with institutional funders, they are very much interested in metrics as well, but they're also interested in hearing stories from like our community. We often, for example, will use testimonials from our users in our applications about like their experience using the Rights Recorder app or their experience with, you know, working with Unlock and how it has helped them. I think it's really important to include these testimonials so that funders can see the impact of your work. And instead of us just saying like, yes, we have helped over 200 households. Yes, we have helped over 200 households. And here's a testimonial from one of our users. I think that has really been changing for us and our approach to speaking to funders. They really appreciate those stories. One example, I have a really great relationship with one of our funders. I won't name them specifically, but they always get really excited when they see our newsletter. And they always message me like, oh, I love that you're doing this. Oh, I love that you mentioned this. Or I love that you're doing this initiative. That's another form of communicating with funders. I will say they are definitely watching your communications plan online. They're definitely watching your newsletters. We also have a specific tailored newsletters just for supporters, which means like funders, allies, supporters in this cause, and where we share quarterly our updates from Unlock. That has also been instrumental in continuing to engage that audience so that they feel part of this movement and this cause.
That is really good to know. And what advice would you have for entrepreneurs who are navigating the grant and fundraising landscape?
Well, I will say the economic climate right now is a bit challenging. But I will say that now I've seen definitely, I was reading a report the other day, I can't remember the organization, but there has been an increase of support from institutional funders. I definitely would look at them as resources or as a foundation to build your venture. And I think as you're building, you have that stability in place from these institutional funders to then start strategizing for, let's say, like different revenues or streams and diversifying your funding prospects. And I think that is what really helped us in the beginning, where a lot of our grants came from institutional funding. So it gave us the stability to not only scale, but focus on strategizing which often I've noticed in nonprofits, it doesn't necessarily work out that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you definitely see nonprofits like not a lot of resources and financial opportunities available for them initially. But for us, it was really important to create that stability, because without the stability, you're not really able to build and dream big. And we dream really big. That was important for us.
Yeah. And speaking of dreaming big, let's shift gears and talk about scaling and that strategic growth that you all are doing. So how does the Unlock NYC reporting system, like to record unfair treatment, put the individually affected community member at the center as opposed to other available reporting systems?
So our reporting system is very user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
The language that we use is also very clear, very simple. So people are directly able to use it straight from their phone at any time, whether it's in the daytime or nighttime. It's available 24/7. Also, the language that we use is not so cold and formal in comparison to like government agencies that have more of a formal structure.
Mm-hmm.
Also, some of the government agencies don't have like the tech infrastructure that we have in place. So, for example, if you go to the 311 page, it's just, you know, you can share a report, but it's just like a web browser. Our chatbot is speaking to our user.
Mm-hmm.
It's having a real-time conversation. It understands its needs, because a lot of the language that we have incorporated comes from language that we have heard and created with tenants as well. So they have been very much involved in this process, and mm-hmm. it definitely reflects within our chatbot. Also, our chatbot is able to provide information on SY law in New York City and connect you to different resources. If, for example, legal service providers, you have the option to select what sort of legal service provider you want your report to be sent to. Something that, for example, 311 may not have available immediately.
Yeah.
They obviously do connect you to legal service providers, but it would have to happen at the point once you are connected to, let's say, CCHR, which is who handles these reports. And that sometimes takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's immediate.
Yeah.
And in regards to scaling statewide, for example, in Buffalo, it works a little differently. And something that we're keeping in mind as we are piloting across New York State is that each city may have a different need. Each user may have a different need. Something that we're noticing in Buffalo is that folks are being signed up to the tool and they're working with their housing mobility counselor. But often they are not that well informed about their rights and don't know about their rights. So we want to be able to incorporate and also provide the training to the housing mobility counselors so that they are well informed of SOI law across New York State as well, and that they're able to share this information with their clients.
Yeah. And Jessica, one of the things you also mentioned earlier is the legal service provider networks. I want to talk about how do you come in contact with those in your legal service provider network, and how has this network grown and changed over time?
Of course, definitely. I will say a lot of it has been from brand visibility and attending a lot of housing panels. We've had actually a lot of outreach done to us where legal service providers will reach out to us and be like, hey, like, we would like to learn more about your tool, or like, we would like to attend a workshop, or do you offer trainings? So something that we've been doing when we get this sort of outreach is folks will ask us if we are interested in doing a training or a workshop for their team. So we've been able to collaborate with these legal service providers, provide either an introductory call, meeting, and workshop as well. And that's how we have been able to build on this network. But I will say having the marketing in place has been really helpful for us.
Yeah.
Where people have either heard from us online or through word of mouth from other nonprofits that we have collaborated with.
Mm-hmm. Doing it, certainly doing it and showing up. Speaking of the growth and expansion, what access to identifiable people and resources do you wish you had that you have not been able to obtain yet?
So something that we're really interested in and that mm-hmm. we're working on this year is on the intersection of source of income discrimination and how it impacts different groups. For example, women, Black women, the elderly, mm-hmm. children are the ones, and also folks who have a disability are the ones that face the most amount of SOI discrimination in mm-hmm. New York City and across the nation. But in New York City, we don't have much data around that. So we are actually working on a demographics research project where we are gathering this sort of data and launching a report hopefully sometime this year so that we can show the greater audience like this is not just an issue that impacts fair housing, but it mm-hmm. impacts civil rights as well. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, I think the majority of folks that are residing in shelters are Black or Latinx. So mm-hmm. these are groups that are tremendously impacted by the sort of discrimination in New York City. And often we have users tell us when they share a report like, yes, it felt discriminatory because of my voucher, but I also felt that I was discriminated because I was a Black woman mm-hmm. or I was disabled or because mm-hmm. I have children. We often see a lot of familial discrimination involved with source of income discrimination. So that's something that is very important for us to not only gather research, but also share with the public as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and letting people know, like, this is happening. This is a world that is really happening, and we're here to stop it.
Yeah.
And I'm also curious to know about the process for training housing mobility counselors, as you do while you're teaming up with enterprise community partners, NPRAC, and also local stakeholders in Buffalo. How does that all work?
So we begin with joint planning sessions with our partners to align on goals, strategies, and any sort of insights for the training program. And then this way we leverage local expertise, and that's where HOME comes in because mm-hmm. they're the experts in their city, and tailor our approach based on the specific needs and challenges that they are facing. For example, in Buffalo that I mentioned earlier, our training will focus on how to use the Rights Recorder app.
Yeah.
But also, it also focuses on like fair housing laws within New York State. Obviously, it's very easy for us because we have that knowledge in New York State, and also HOME as well has this access and this knowledge. And we like to also incorporate data and insights from like our systems change program so that they have access to this data as well. We also we've had workshops with our housing mobility counselors in Buffalo as well. Our colleagues have engaged in, you know, using the Rights Recorder app and also providing like social media marketing and content as well that they can share with their tenants. So we really emphasize on like advocacy skills, but also building trust with the tenants and building trust with the app as well.
Mm-hmm. All phenomenal things. Now I want to talk about the role of Communitas and all of the amazing things that you are doing. How has Communitas been a part of your journey and really helping you build as an entrepreneur?
Definitely. So I have a great relationship with Tan Moon. Mm-hmm. I look at Tan Moon as a mentor, someone who's extremely wise, and I trust her so much for advice or questions I may have. Even though I've been involved in this work for the past 4 or 5 years, I know there's always more room to grow and learn. And Comunitas has provided that space for growth, and having Sun Moon's advice has been invaluable for me. I also really love the community emphasis on collaboration, and it aligns very much with our values at Unlock. It's been able to help me build connections and relationships with my other cohort 10 members. And that is also invaluable to me. I really love this community, and I'm really excited to see it grow more.
That's so beautiful. And for those of you who don't know, Samoon is the executive director at Communitas America, and she loves to stay low key, but we won't let her. And so, Jessica, if you had to say, what specific resources or connections have been the most valuable for helping you in your growth?
Well, I will start off with saying the training and all the educational resources during our cohort was amazing. Mm-hmm. But also being able to have Harlem Hayground as a space that we're able to use for events. So we hosted our first community event actually last year at Harlem Hayground. And we invited supporters and stakeholders and voucher holders to be part of this event. And that was really amazing for us to have this community event in person. And it was all thanks to Comunitas and Harlem Hayground.
Yeah. And Jessica, have you collaborated with those who are in the Comunitas community?
Yes, actually, during the community event that we had, I collaborated with some of the other alumni, and they were part of, we had like a poetry slam session. So they were part of that. And then we had another member who was able to exhibit her art, which was really cool. It was a really like artsy spoken word fun event, which is often really hard to have when it involves like such a hard pressing issue.
Yeah.
But it was really nice to be able to see our community come out and also have the support from Comunitas.
That is a beautiful. And what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are seeking that community-based support or networks to help them grow their businesses?
I would say be flexible, leave space for growth. Don't think you know it all because you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Be open to collaboration, work with others. I don't feel that anyone can be successful on their own. They need the support and they need the voice of the community to help them get to that level of success. I think you can ask any entrepreneur, they're not doing it on their own. They have teams that are committed to either their venture or their cause. And that's really important. To me, the most important thing within a venture is the community, is the people. Without them, you're not going to be able to be there.
Yeah, certainly. And what's next for you? What's the next big milestone? Because I know we covered a lot of milestones that you're aiming for. You've done a lot. And so what's next and how do you see it impacting the growth of the company?
What's next for us? So I'm trying to get really creative with like our storytelling at Unlock. I think it's important for us to humanize the data. So I am working on our first test pilot for our Unlock podcast next summer.
Ooh.
You guys inspired me.
Yay.
And I think it will be a great platform to A, inform the general audience who perhaps don't know about this sort of issue.
Mm-hmm.
To engage also stakeholders like policymakers and also engage our voucher holder community who may want to like actually hear about Unlock the work and the stories from real people who are experiencing this. I think podcasting has such a major influence in people. I think Americans overall, I think I was reading the stats over the other day, like over 60% of Americans listen to podcasts daily. Mm-hmm. There's such a huge market, and I feel like that's a market that we need to touch and we haven't touched yet.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I've been enlightened. Yeah, I'm excited for it because also I've been enlightened during this conversation. I'm like, everybody else needs to hear about this. Awesome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And any future strategic partnerships that are in the works?
I can't exactly talk about it yet.
Okay.
But we do have a major collaboration coming up, and we do have some really exciting funding prospects coming up that are aiding us in our scaling initiative. So I'm really excited. Once I get the confirmation, the green light to share, I will be sharing your social media, but I feel these are like major role players and I'm really excited to collaborate with them and be able to bring Unlock to other places, to more communities.
Certainly. And speaking of sharing on social media, so people can be the first to know, what is the social media and how can people find you and support you?
Definitely. So we are on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and you can find us under at We Unlock NYC. And you can also go to our website, weunlock.nyc as well.
Perfect. And my final question is, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are passionate about making an impact in the realm of financial inclusion, specific to your community of end beneficiaries, but who are just starting out?
Have a very set, clear idea and list of like your goals, your mission. Mm-hmm. Strategically plan, because you're not going to do this all within the first 6 months of you creating and being in this like sort of like prototype phase. Also being very realistic about your goals. I think it's, I mean, obviously it's important to dream big and we dream big, but we're also very pragmatic about our approach. And also being able to take advice and perhaps mentorship from other mentors or allies who are involved. For example, in your specific market, looking to those partnerships and being able to get advice from them is important as well. Just because this may be something new to you, it's also always important to seek advice from people that already have the experience, who have already lived through this, perhaps communicating and networking with other entrepreneurs that are in a far more advanced stage than your own organization. I think that has also been very helpful for myself and for others within my team.
That is solid advice. Jessica, thank you for being on the Communitas of New York podcast, and also thank you for the work that you are doing. We appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much for this opportunity to share more about Unlock and what we do.
Yeah.
You know, we are very committed to this and to like making ourselves visible and addressing these issues that are often ignored. You know, we're in the middle of a major housing crisis across the country. And I truly do believe in creating a future where everyone has a right to secure housing. No one should be in the streets. No one should be facing housing insecurity. We have more than enough resources in this country to help out everyone. So thank you.
You're welcome. And we support it.
Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall and this is Communitas of New York. Season 1 is produced by Simone Jung and David Michael D. Gregoria.